This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
It's better over here.
Now at T-Mobile, get four 5G phones on us and four lines for $25 a line per month when you switch with eligible trade-ins. All on America's largest 5G network.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees and $10 device connection charge. Phones via 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. Bill credits end if you pay off devices early. See T-Mobile.com.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Here's the man that you fear most in football staring you right in the face.
Mark Grody.
I call him a maniac. Stone maniac.
Covering the Bears for 670 The Score.
You had to overcome the mystique. It was almost like an odor. He exuded a kind of a presence.
Co-host of the Take the North podcast.
His whole damn life was football. Wasn't driving a pretty car. Wasn't going to the local bar and pounding your chest, I'm the greatest. It was the opposite.
Mark Grody.
He was Moby Dick in a goldfish bowl.
Mark Grody with Spiegel and Holmes on 670 The Score.
You damn right he is. This segment with Mark Grody is being brought to you by Loyola Medicine. When things are at their worst, we're at our best. And our segment with Patrick Manley is brought to you by AARP. The younger you are, the more you need AARP. Gross, did you hear our segment with Patrick Manley?
I did not. No.
Ooh, he was on fire, sir.
Do tell. He was Give me some deets.
He was on fire about the idea that Cairo Santos didn't kick from the right hash.
And that Matt Eberflus wouldn't cop today to the idea that he should. Manley's like, I've been a guy, been a special teamer for 16 years. That is training camp stuff. And that is also stuff that's said at the beginning of any potential field goal drive at the end. Make sure we end up at whichever hash the kicker wants. And Cairo admitted today, again, that he would have preferred the right hash. He did it without finger pointing, but clearly there was a screw up here. And again, Eberflus is unwilling to own it, Mark. It's every week. It's amazing.
Well, it was pretty incredible, too. And the exchange today was really short with Matt Eberflus. He was asked about that. When you go back and look, I believe it was our guy Nick Moriano from CHGO asked him about getting the ball to the right hash. And
Matt, going back to the blocked field goal, was there any thought of moving the ball to the right hash, considering that's where Cairo likes to kick his extra point?
Yeah, there was not. There was not. We feel good with our decision there.
That's that. We feel good about our decision there. Moving on. Don't ask any more questions about that. That's what I heard from Matt Eberflus right there.
It's insane, man. It really is. It's like, I mean, it's just human insecurity, right? The unwillingness to say that a mistake was made. He's worried about showing any lack of strength at all, and he's wrong.
That's why it is, and this is a great example, and Matt Eberflus is not the only coach or manager or boss that is guilty of this, but there's the disingenuous, it starts with me. It starts with me. Blame me. Put it on me. And we've been getting some of that from Matt Eberflus. It starts with me. But then when we go to specific items like the right hash, which everybody who's a Bears fan at this point, this is not the first time the right hash has come up with Cairo Santos. If you're a Bears fan and you follow Bears reports and Bears football, Everybody knows where Cairo Santos likes to kick the ball from. There's an opportunity right there for Matt Eberflus to take true culpability, and he doesn't. But I'm sure he'll stand up there if the Bears lose on Sunday to Minnesota and say, it starts with me. And it just proves how and like I said, Flus is not the only one who has been guilty of that through the years of being disingenuous. But I hate that. It bugs me.
It should bug you because it's one thing to, in the moment, maybe you don't think of it, and that's okay, even though you're 3 years into the job. But then when you have chance to review it, when coaches always use the escape hatch of let me look at the film,
yeah,
and you have the opportunity to go back and go, man, we gave away 25 seconds where we could have been discussing this as an option. And this is where I'm like, hey, where's your staff? Like, where's Richard Hightower in this? Where's your kicker being like, guys, we got to get the ball to the right hash. Like, all of these things are things that the head coach should know. And for him to double down on stupidity is infuriating.
It is. And I think, well, maybe not. Maybe he would not be given the benefit of the doubt at this very moment just because of all the bullet point mistakes.
We're all out of benefits for Matt Eberflus at this point.
We are. So maybe, Lawrence, maybe if we were trying to think of a rationalization from Matt's perspective why he wouldn't, he knows that he's being indicted on a daily basis and that his job is on the line. So at this point, I don't think he wants to continue to collect, at least publicly, you know, quote-unquote mistakes that he's made, because at this point, whether he's going to admit it or not, he is fighting for his job, and he knows it. He knows that.
I think it's absolutely true. So Eberflus talked today, and Caleb talked today. It was quarterback day, Mark. Give us what you got.
Yeah, let's start with Caleb Williams. I got a couple of cuts that I've chosen from his day today, select cuts, I might add. We always seem to like to project confidence on players. Like in the case of Caleb Williams, it was, well, the Bears lost, but hey, at least the quarterback got some confidence back. 23 of 31 for 231 yards, hitting six different receivers, getting DJ Moore going. So he was asked that question. What did the Green Bay game do for you from a confidence standpoint, Caleb?
Yeah, I wouldn't say it did anything for me mentally. I think after the third game, I realized that I can play, and I feel good playing. I've said multiple times that regardless of the interceptions in the beginning of the season, that I felt like I was seeing the field well and things like that, and that still stands today. There's going to be rough times, rough patches over the long healthy career that I hopefully have, that's not going to change my mindset, and nor is it going to change it now. So, been able to have a good game versus or a solid game, I would say, versus a team like that is obviously it goes into practice and the details and all of that, which is everybody talked about, coach and Coach Flus and Thomas and all of them. And so, I think being able to be consistent, throughout the weeks of practice, film and all of the above, I think it leads into a consistent path. And so just have to stay on that path and keep going.
So, yeah, I got to stay on the path and keep going. He can minimize it if he wants in terms of the simplification, which we played earlier. He can minimize it in terms of the step forward. But it was obvious to everybody, including his own teammates, Cole Kmet, as we talked about yesterday. I'm hoping this is week one of the rest of Caleb's season, which looks really comfortable, Mark. I just want to see him comfortable and keep just being himself like this.
No, 100%. I would take that those numbers that he had this week. Love to see a 300-yard game sprayed in there. I know he's had a couple already this season. But I just think it's amazing, too, how he's like, it didn't really do much for me. Because the rest of us thought it did something for him.
Yeah,
but in the case of Caleb,
I was struck,
he's like,
by that, too.
Yeah, where he's just like, mentally, you guys talk too much. Let's go to the second Caleb Williams cut. As we all know, the big story, and then we saw it last year on the first play of the game, Minnesota Vikings love to blitz and bring heat, and Brian Flores is the head man of that defense. The Vikings blitz, as a matter of fact, a league high 37.7% of the time. Caleb Williams has been pretty good against the blitz this year. He's gotten better, and here is why he thinks he's had that success.
I think first it starts throughout the week, understanding where and when your hot routes are going to be there. For instance, you know, there's going to be times where you may have to hold the ball and just stand in there. And then there's going to be times where, and meaning that you don't have any hot routes on some plays. And then there's going to be plays where you do have hot routes, or there's going to be, you know, side adjust or any of these different things that happen. And you just have to know where they are, and you have to feel and see the blitz. And you're not always going to have an answer pre-snap, meaning you're not always going to be able to make an adjustment for protection. You're not always going to be able to do things like that. And then, like I said before, many different interviews, is that the defense, their job is to go out there and disguise and hold blitzes and, you know, do all these different things. So when you see it and feel it post-snap, and you couldn't make an adjustment pre-snap, you got to know where the hots are. And yeah, I think I've done a solid job. I think I can do a lot better, especially this week, knowing that you know, they're going to try and blitz me. And you know, when they do bring those blitzes, being decisive, getting the ball in my hands, getting it to my playmakers, and then, you know, let them go, you know, break tackles, make plays, and, you know, run down the sidelines and things like that. So you know, I think it's leaning on those guys is first and foremost, and then just know where my hots are. Awesome. Thank you. The Bears.
Ha. The end game, where you want to be, and it'd be a lot to expect of him right away this week, but the end game is that you're a quarterback wanting them to blitz. That you're like, hell yeah, bring it, because I know how to beat it, and we'll just pick you apart. Because that's where it ended up getting. Kurt Warner has said that. That's where it ends up getting, that you're like, bring it on. But the short term is that we're back to him really needing to think a lot pre-snap. And we just talked all week about him thinking less pre-snap, and now we're talking about him having to think pre-snap.
This is a challenge this week,
yes,
too.
Yes, it
because
is.
Because it's not just that they blitz. It's that I think one of the issues that Caleb had earlier was watching teams and them changing their coverage post-snap. And I think Flores is really good at making it look like he's doing something and then doing something that you're not expecting. So I can't wait to see how this goes, honestly. Like, I'm so psyched up to see if Caleb and Thomas Brown are ready for what Brian Flores is going to throw at them. It's everything as far as, like, how I'm watching this game.
Yeah, and I am still floored by the football. And when you hear Caleb Williams right there, his football intellect, his aptitude, and it just reminds me of why the Bears did put so much on his plate in training camp and early in the season. He answers questions well. It's all right there. Now it's just a matter of executing it more consistently. And yeah, I love the idea of this test. And that does bring us to Thomas Brown, the offensive coordinator, who's going to have to put together, you know, he's going to have to be ready for a lot. What a test for him for a second game, for the first year, second game offensive coordinator. One of the things that I am now wanting to find out about here in week two of Thomas Brown is let's get beyond the answers of, oh, he's bringing all this energy and enthusiasm. That's great. That's awesome to have. To me, though, that's just bonus stuff. If you got that, it's great. So after DJ Moore did talk about the energy, so let's get beyond that. What is the offensive coordinator Thomas Brown bringing to this team on the field, DJ Moore?
Just finding matchups with motions and different stuff like that. So just moving people around.
Was the pre-snap motion something that you guys were, as veterans, calling for prior to that, or wanted more of?
You want more of it beforehand. We did it this past week, and you've seen the mismatches that we had and getting the people in space that, to go make plays. So, I mean, you want more of it. Does it make you more tired? Yeah, but oh well. It's helping the team.
What did you feel like you were in more control, and which ways did that show up?
Yeah, I felt like we were more in control, especially with the play clock and then understanding what play was coming next. So that was a good deal.
It just felt more sequenced.
I would say the game was called more the way that we hoped in the past, but now it is on track. So let's get it going.
There's some efficiency issues there that Caleb mentioned too, that getting the plays in quickly makes a huge difference. And Kurt Warner backed that up and explained how it can make a huge difference for a quarterback who's trying to figure out. And motion, when you go from the team that was like the least motioning team in the NFL to going, oh, well, we can give our quarterback more clues if we put people in motion. It seems like a fairly simple offensive thought. Yet, for some strange reason, for the first 9 weeks of the season, not really that interested.
Eventually, I'll just be able to hear stuff about the offense without thinking about how stupid this whole process was, but that time is not yet.
It is not now.
It is not yet, because all I'm thinking is like, oh, it was good to get the plays in fast. That was good. To know what play we are running and to have better control of the play clock, that was good. I mean, it's unbelievable. Isn't it, Groats, just how bad it was?
No, Speaks, you're having the exact reaction to that cut that I was. It's just because I would have said coming out of that, like, I hate to keep indicting the predecessor in this case.
We'll stop at some point, but we can't yet. We can't.
Right. Right. I mean, it is a head shaker, like little thing, like DJ Moore being very honest about all those things. It's not just getting the play call in more quickly. It's a big part of it, but like all of this, like just the simple part of setting up mismatches for your weapons out there. So hopefully we'll get to a week. I was talking about this in the locker room with some guys today. Hopefully we're going to get to a week soon for the Bears where we're not just cleaning up the past week or the past OC. one more. One of these days, keep the dream alive, guys. Keep it alive. I mean, it's what we, as reporters, we're all wishing for. Can we just look ahead to the opponent? And we're kind of doing that in this Bears update, but not as much as I would like. That said, you guys said that you played the Caleb Williams cut earlier from when I asked him about, you know, did you simplify? Is the offense simplified? And do you take exception to that? Caleb Williams, who I felt like he kind of did in the nicest way because...
You were stirring the pot. Groats.
Well, I don't know. I was trying to stir the pot, but during it, and he gave a very long answer. He was smiling a lot during it, which said to me, that's like the sarcastic smile. Come on, you know, shake it. Could simplify me. I knew those were words that Caleb Williams wouldn't want to hear, and I just wanted to confirm it. So I took the question to DJ Moore in the locker room. Again, Caleb Williams did not believe that the offense was simplified, and here is that question now to DJ Moore.
Caleb seemed to take exception to the idea that the offense was simplified. Mm-hmm. Was the offense simplified, and what do you think about that?
Maybe, I don't know. It was maybe everybody was more on detail, so the game slowed down and everything for him. So everybody else was out there just doing their job, just so he can do his job the best that he can.
When you guys are hitting the short, quick stuff, how does that open stuff up deeper down the field for you?
Everybody on the defense is going to be worried about either me catching the ball short and then going deep, or we just send Keenan over the top to go deep on Rome. So they wouldn't be expecting Keenan.
Is that the next step here to kind of to get better at the deep stuff? I know from 20 yards and more, it's not been great this year.
Yeah, we got to work on that. Hopefully it comes together this week and go from there.
Thank you, DJ.
Thank you, DJ.
By the way, I left that part on because I was being razzed by fellow reporters in that group as we interviewed DJ Moore because I put my mouth up to the recorder to say, thank you, DJ. I didn't realize I had done it because usually I like to do that for the benefit of the audience. They're like, what are you doing, making this your own interview? Like, you're going to walk away acting like you asked all those questions?
Why not? Why not?
Yeah, why not? Right. We all got to get ahead somehow.
Baked potato,
DJ Moore. I think it's very interesting that, I mean, to some degree, of course, it has been simplified. And great question by Patrick Finley there, too, because the Bears have been brutal, Caleb Williams and the Bears brutal from 20 yards or more. And I think right now they're averaging, Caleb, just 6.2 yards per pass play right now. So obviously things have slowed down a bit, and you want to get Caleb Williams back to the point where he's flinging it downfield with success.
Thank you, DJ.
thank you, DJ.
I should have said say hi to your daughters for me.
It's funny. It was a Waldron thing, us being upset about the average depth of target for Keenan Allen and like is still having him go run all these deep routes. But DJ referenced it there, too, like they're still going to do it. But even as he was referencing it, he said, and then Keenan going deep, they'll never expect that. You know, so it's funny. It's still in there, and I'm surprised that it's in there, but there it is.
It's still in there for sure. What about on the defensive side, Groats?
Yeah, Tremaine Edmonds stepped to the podium today, and you know, we're always trying to figure out what's going on against the run this year. It's been strange that beyond the first 4 weeks last year, run defense has been rough. And Tremaine Edmonds said something that he has said before, that they got to get their fundamentals back. It's all about the fundamentals. And Mark Potash was asked a great follow-up, saying essentially, why, you know, the fundamentals, they should have been taken care of in training camp. How is that an excuse? Here's Maine.
You know, when you look at football as a whole, you know, obviously year in, year out, you play to play a perfect game. So, I mean, that just goes back down to fundamentals. You know, it's always something in a football game where, you know, somebody may not, you know, things happen, you know what I mean? Whether somebody may get out of gap, whether, you know, somebody's not fitting this right, you know, things happen. But I think that's what you practice for. That's what you, you know, you plan to be perfect in those aspects. But, you know, sometimes things don't go right. But I think that's, you know, what we come in each and every day honing down to, making sure that we knowing what our job is, knowing what our responsibility is, and doing it at a high level.
It's rare that a team will drop in run defense but go up in points allowed. You're much better against that. What does that mean to you? Because they always say it starts with the run game, but yet your run game isn't as good, but your defense overall is better.
Yeah, I mean, each year is different. You know what I mean? What we had success with last year, things we did last year, everything is different this year just as far as what the NFL presents, what the NFL, the challenges of the NFL. It's going to be areas that we may have struggled with last year, we better with this year, or areas that we wasn't as good with last year, we better with this year. But I think just as a whole, you know, understanding that we want to be the best in every category there is. So it's not just run, it's not just pass, it's as a total defense, you know what I mean? And, you know, at the end of the day, winning is what we focus on, you know what I mean? I know we get honed into numbers and everything, but we want to win. So that's what our mindset is. So everything that we do today on the practice field is going to be geared towards winning this game on Sunday.
Some challenges for them this week with the way that Minnesota's offense works and the resurgence of Sam Darnold and him being very efficient, but he has given the ball away occasionally, and that's something that we could see the Bears like really take control of the game if they're able to do that.
Yeah, no, it's true. And by the way, very undercovered this week because he didn't end up signing, but yeah. Tremaine Edmonds' little brother, Terrell Edmonds, the safety, tried out for the Bears this week. Another former first-round draft pick. They were the first brothers ever to be first-round draft picks. And their dad, Pharrell Edmonds, was a damn good tight end for the Miami Dolphins with
Incredible
Dan Marino.
Incredible music producer, too.
Oh, my God, one of the best.
Yeah. He's very happy.
So, look, big pile of Edmondses. They throw the Edmondses at you.
I actually, as we left that interview, he was at the podium today, and I was like, man, what? We forgot to ask about his little brother. How about this, though? How about this? This Bears is a make good. This is one of my Bears nuggets. And that Sunday will be Tremaine Edmonds' 100th game. Here's why it's really significant. He's the youngest player ever to reach 100 games. Tremaine Edmonds is only 26 years old, guys.
Wow.
Isn't that crazy?
That's wild.
It really is. It really is.
That's for him.
So yeah,
and also just to the point too of the Bears, while they're giving up more explosive plays, the point is correct. Like, I'm looking at it right now, the updated stats and the points per game. The Bears are seventh in the league. They allow 18.7 points per game. Now Minnesota, better. They are fourth in the league at 17 points per game. That very fine line. So some two fine defenses on the field this Sunday at Soldier
Field.
Yeah,
there are. And just to reiterate from Turn the Page, where it did come up as well, the Vikings are the number one run defense in the NFL. They have passed the Ravens. It is incredibly difficult to run on them. It's really difficult to run on them between the tackles.
Here's something crazy, though, too. And I thought, did I see this incorrectly? You're right. They are, absolutely number one, 74.4 yards per game. Passing yards, though, they're 28th in the league.
They're giving up the yards, but they're not giving up the points.
Yeah.
They're only giving up 17 a game. Yep.
Yeah, so they got their own little bend but don't break. So, in other words, Caleb Williams should be able to do things in the passing game. It's just a matter of whether or not they'll be able to force it into the end zone. So, some interesting numbers there for both teams.
What else
we
want to
hear from the Flus. I do have Flus if we got time.
Give us some Flus. Fire
yeah,
away.
Yeah, Flus. I thought Flus actually gave a pretty good answer on the short passes from Caleb. And he was asked, is that a way to get his confidence up and to lead him to the longer passes downfield? Here's the almighty Flus.
Yeah, I don't think it's a one-answer thing. I believe that there's multiple ways to get people going. And one of them is the short passing game. But you can do things, other things. It can be, you know, the screen game, which you saw, and then it can also be various ways of getting them going. And I think you have to use that during the course of the year because people, defenses only can defend what they see. So you got to create, you know, and have that creativity every single week to make it look different, you know, attacking different parts of the field, using different people. And changing the sequencing of how you do things. And I think we did a really nice job of that last week, and we need to adjust and adapt and change this week.
That's sensible offensive philosophy from a dead man walking. I agree.
So it all rings hollow, eh?
A little bit.
Groats, nuggets, and tidbits.
A couple things left here. We learned today that there's been apparently more post-practice work lately between quarterback and receivers, Caleb, and his crew of receivers. Not that they haven't done that this year, but it sounds like they did that a lot last week and will apparently continue to do that this week. Also learned that the Bears will be wearing their 1936 uniforms on Sunday. Those are the ones with the three orange stripes on the helmet and the white jersey with the blue and orange and piping. So, yeah, it's really about the helmet. So it's the 1936 throwback uniform, which to me, anything as long as they're not wearing the orange uniforms, I don't care what uniforms the Bears are wearing out there.
These are badass unis.
The
they are.
Helmets.
What's that?
The winged helmets.
Yeah, absolutely great looking.
Yeah, no, it's a sick look. Do you guys remember who first modeled the uniforms back in the 100th year anniversary?
It's Tariq Cohen, right?
No, it wasn't Tariq Cohen.
Kyle Fuller? Boy,
Kyle Fuller. Ding, 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 ding.
Yes.
Chris Tannehill, you are.
which I believe made him the first black person to wear that jersey.
Oh, my God. Oh, that's pretty cool. Pathetic.
Well, Jack Silverstein did a whole thing on this because... Speaks, you didn't know this?
No, well, it makes sense now that you're mentioning it. Well, yeah, 1936, tough to do it.
There was like this kind of... No, but I mean, there was like a soft segregation thing that had happened in the 30s that may have been because of George Halas.
Oh, God.
And Jack did the whole like history of it. So like when they did it, when they announced the uniforms, and people were like, oh, Kyle Fuller's the first black player to ever wear that uniform, the Bears were like, wait, what? And George had to like learn the history of what Marshall and maybe George Halas might have done to segregate the league at that point.
That was a thing. Now, I remember that, Lawrence. Yes, a little bit of criticism as was posed back. That was 2018, right? Going into the 2019 season, because there was so much happiness. I remember being at that celebration in Rosemont coming off the 2018. Am I right? Yeah, I think it was coming off the 2018
season. You are correct,
season.
Sir.
Yes. And then
Senator.
Kyle Fuller comes out there looking good and sharp. And God, remember how good Kyle Fuller was for a couple years?
We do.
God, was he
really
good.
Great.
We do indeed. Growth to the best.
Bears. He can really end quickly,
Bears.
Which is something
stop,
that
stop
at some
me,
point.
Stop me, because I'm just going to go down Bears history here. If you guys keep me on the radio, I will go, and you guys have a
you
wonderful...
You were there.
Been trying to get
I
you
was. A lot of people think I wasn't there. That's BS.
Everybody,
I was there.
You weren't down there. I was.
It's so true, man.
Bye, Mark.
Bye, guys.
Bye,
thank you, DJ.
That's Mark Grody. When we come back, we saw something that really made us think, because it's about one great player in Chicago, young player. And it made us think maybe about a couple others. We'll share what we mean next here on The Score.
Spiegel and Holmes.
If you're not listening to this show, then I don't know how you're hearing this. But if you're also not listening for other reasons, then you need to stop not listening, because this is a show you should be listening to.
Afternoons on The Score.
If that's not a promo, I don't know what is.
With the first pick in the 2024 NFL Draft.
And with the first overall selection
in the 2023 NHL Draft.
The Chicago Bears select.
The Chicago Blackhawks are very proud to select. From the Regina Pats, the Western Hockey League, Connor Bedard.
Caleb Williams, quarterback, Southern California.
Couple of number one overalls right there in the mix. We were talking about this off the air the other day, Lawrence, and now we've both read it. The tremendous Chicago Magazine piece about Connor Bedard. It's a wonderful profile and got
by one of the best profile writers in the game. Wayne Drez is one of the best to do it, and there really isn't a place for him to do what he does so well. He did it for, 20 years at ESPN Magazine, where he'd go and he'd have these crazy experiences and write about them. And there's not a lot of room for that anymore. So now Wayne continues to find writing projects. He's also a professor at the University of Iowa now in their journalism department. I think he actually might be a professor in residence. There at Iowa. So I'm not to, when you said he wrote it, I was like, I am immediately going to go find it.
Don Van Natta, the great long form journalist at ESPN, does a Sunday long read where they'll send out an email every week and they collect like what they think are the best long reads of the week. And there it was in there. And I was like, man, that's right here. I should have read it. And so I immediately pounced on it. And it's phenomenal. It's like just so much good research and good access to Bedard and teammates and more. But just really painted a picture of him as a person, as a 19-year-old 2,000 miles from home. And then what they did with Chicago Mag is they recreated the Ferris Bueller scene from the Art Institute where Cameron is in his Red Wings jersey in front of Sunday Afternoon at Le Grand Jatte by George Surratt. And they had Bedard stand there in his Blackhawks jersey instead with the same pose. And that's the picture. And there's a whole like making of that you can access online and everything. So great cover art, great inside art
great
for a magazine. Great photography and a terrific piece that really lets you get to know an incredibly important sports figure who we don't really know a lot about on the personal level.
Well, hockey players are like that. Like, you don't really get to know them because they usually feel like if I haven't accomplished anything, then, you know, I shouldn't be talking. They don't like to make it about themselves ordinarily, which is I feel a certain way about. I get the team aspect of it and culturally what that is, but I think that it would help in some regards to help sell the game a little bit if people got to know it. And I was thinking about like the parallel tracks that he and Caleb Williams are on and apparently have been on. And I was thinking about how with Bedard, like in there, Wayne writes about how he was just at the Whole Foods. And he looks like just anyone's unassuming 19-year-old kid.
Yep.
And this is one of the best players in the NHL.
He gets to do his version of acclimating to Chicago life miles from home under the cover of hockey as opposed to in the glare of football. And obviously still at games because, like, there's a bunch of Hawks players and Nick Foligno, the veteran, the captain who's taking him under his wing. Bunch of people talking about, I've never seen anything like this in terms of the exposure and everything like that. But it's still hockey. So you're still in a helmet. And once you're walking around in actual life, you know, it's very different than Caleb Williams. I don't think Caleb Williams can go to Whole Foods alone necessarily.
Maybe
he can, but he doesn't have the same kind of
anonymity.
He doesn't have the same anonymity.
Yeah, and it was fun to see that. It was also interesting to, as far as the parallels go, the trust that Bedard's parents had in him is similar, not the same, but similar as Caleb Williams' parents had in him, where Caleb spends all that time by himself in high school, which is crazy.
Yeah,
that they were able to do that, and that he has come out being so mature and so well adjusted. And this was a question for Bedard and his family on, do you live with the family initially while you're here in Chicago? And
right.
they kind of said no, and let him live on his own. But the good thing is that he lives around his coach and a bunch of players that are all in the same building.
In a doorman building, absolutely. But there still was that night when he broke his jaw and the parents, mom wasn't in town yet, and somebody's got to hang with the 19-year-old after he just broke his freaking jaw, and he's on all kinds of pain meds and just had the surgery, and a player and his wife stayed over at the house and hung with him until his mom could get to town. And it's like, you don't think about the humanity of some of that stuff.
Well, that's why I thought it was such a great piece too, because I think about that because I deal with students a lot. So I have some outliers. Like I have a bunch of military students that are finishing their education after their service. And it's always interesting to see what they're like compared to the 19 and 20 and 21 year olds that I have in the class. And then you think about that, where you think about Caleb and you think about Bedard and you go, they're still forming as human beings.
Yeah. Oh, big time.
And they're being asked to do a lot of stuff that is difficult for most people.
That's in my mind when we talk about Caleb a lot. You know, like there have been two times this week where I've used the phrase, he's kind of one of those fake it till you make it guys. Like, and I don't say it in a disparaging way because we've all been 22. You know what I mean? It's like you put on the confidence that you may not have sometimes so you can achieve what you're doing. I always remember Jerry Seinfeld and Steve Martin in a great episode of Comedians in Cars with Coffee. We're talking about confidence, and Seinfeld's asking Steve Martin, how did you have the confidence to do what you did in your 20s, playing arenas as a stand-up comic? And Steve Martin said, I had fake confidence. That's what I had. And Jerry's like, oh, yeah, they're the same thing. And Steve Martin's like, yep, they sure are, in terms of being able to perform. So I think about it with a certain level of empathy when I'm talking about Caleb. And obviously we should when we're talking about Bedard as well.
And let's throw Angel Reese into that, too, where we're talking about the same age, and she's navigating a lot of this stuff as well. And you go, oh, you know, they're these digital natives, like they understand everything that's going on. But still, you know, Angel this past week was just like, okay, so I'm not going to talk about my love life anymore on the interwebs because that's stupid of me to do. And so they're all like going through these growing pains that are difficult for all of us, but they're doing it under a spotlight that is so glaring.
Great, great piece. Recommend it highly. And think about yourself at 19 as you're reading about Connor Bedard at 19.
Chicago Magazine, you need to check it out. It's really, really well done on Connor Bedard.
Heard this story this morning. We got to bring it to the listeners. The football-baseball crossover and a touch of excellent fatherhood stuff when we come back on Spiegel & Holmes on The Score.
Spiegel & Holmes.
It is on like radio.
With a fleet of super bads and status Radon Charm.
Afternoons on The Score.
Like prime time. Always thought that. You know, it's like, you know, tonight's, you know, going to be a good night. Has that Black Eyed Peas kind of feel. That's always the kind of feeling. We're going, got my friends are with me, and we're going to go out. Let's make it a great night.
Black Eyed Peas said, okay.
Who isn't, right?
Jim Harbaugh's a delightful wackadoodle. It's a damn good football coach.
We're getting close to Jim Harbaugh time, right? Gobble, gobble, turkeys.
Turkey gobbler, gobblers. We are. And the hot brother-on-brother action, the Monday Nighter, that's coming up very soon, as a matter of fact. But Jim Harbaugh was the subject of conversation on This Is Football with Kevin Clark. And he and Adam Schefter in conversation on this episode, and there's a Schefter clip that's gotten a lot more play, but this is not about that. This is about a Kenny Williams story that Kevin Clark decided to tell that I'd never heard before.
Neither had I.
Oh, man, it is awesome, about Kenny Williams and Jim Harbaugh. Listen up.
If I may tell a story about Jim Harbaugh, owners meeting 2014, 2013, I want to say, we're in Phoenix, and Kenny Williams, who is the White Sox GM at the time, is at the bar. You know, as you know, lots of baseball people live at that resort in Arizona during spring training. So you'd see Clayton Kershaw, you'd see a bunch of people just in the lobby all the time because they've got a lot of money and they can live in a nice resort. Must be nice. But Kenny Williams is one of those people, the White Sox GM. And we're sitting there, and I think we were next to each other, and I knew who he was, and shook up a conversation there. At the end, he says, hey, is Jim Harbaugh here? Because, you know, he knew what I was doing there. And I said, yeah. And he goes, do you know where I could find him? And I said, no, but I'll find Bob Lang or somebody and we can connect. And I said, well, why do you ask? And he said, oh, I didn't mention this, but it's always something I wanted to do, which is that my son was on the 49ers, and he was the one that muffed the punts in the NFC Championship game.
Oh, wow.
And he said that
wow,
he wanted to thank Jim Harbaugh. I almost get emotional thinking about this now that I'm a parent. He said he wanted to thank Jim Harbaugh because when nobody loved his son, Jim Harbaugh did. And the love that Jim Harbaugh showed his son and the compassion, when everybody was mad at him, he wanted to, as a man, father to father, thank him. And I'm not sure I've ever heard a better story about how to coach a team after a loss. And there's a reason the next year they were able to get to the Super Bowl. There's a reason, you know, like you just hear those stories and you go, oh, okay, this makes sense.
That's a wrap.
How about that, man?
That's pretty great. I'm not surprised. Like, it's Kenny is a man who loves football, loves his sons, and is very proud to be a father. So that's dope.
Kyle Williams with that muffed punt. The fact that Harbaugh gave him love as a man and a human that night is pretty damn cool.
Yeah, Jim Harbaugh could be the coach here, but
they weren't interested.
Not interested in
his. He was the coach at Michigan.
That's right. Thank you.
Not interested in his type of leadership, which is
we're not going to be in the Harbaugh race. Let me tell you that
is on display there in that cut about Kenny Williams.
Oh yeah,
you better stay out of our business. You better stay out of White Sox business.
I think Jim Harbaugh is now allowed to be in White Sox business if he wants to.
God.
Yeah.
And now Bears fans are left saying, who's got it better than us?
Everybody.
Everybody.
Except like the Panthers, the Jags.
The Jets, the Giants.
Yeah, all right, you're right.
The Titans.
Who's got it better than us? A lot of teams.
About 27 of them.
Most of the league has it better than us.
You see that rumor that Bill might come back for the Jags job?
Bill Belichick?
Yeah.
He's going to come back for some job.
Yeah.
He's just taking a little siesta here. He's going to come back.
With his hot girlfriend. She's like 28.
Good for him.
Good for him, dude.
For my partner, Matt Spiegel.
It's not creepy
for
at all.
Tanny and for
yeah,
Shane.
No, it's not creepy to call a 28-year-old woman
her?
Hot.
How about good for her? Bill Belichick's a good-looking guy with a lot of personality.
Hey, Spiegs, I'm sorry for calling a 28-year-old woman hot. My bad.
You're good.
My bad.
Wasn't upset about that. I was just, I was worried that Tanny wasn't going to say that. Thank God he did. Bunch of weirdos.
Thanks for the love and support that you show this show. We will try to repay you in kind tomorrow at 2 o'clock here on The Score.
Because of the score was the score today, there's a lot of things to learn from that tape.